This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Rich Cioli Show Podcast.
You know, when I tell you that the left has gone crazy, their candidates, I'm not the only one saying it. Democrats are even warning of the fact that as they go further and further left, it's going to be impossible for them to win the general election. I'm not kidding you. There's Jimmy Carter people out there pleading with Democrats, please be more like Jimmy Carter. Yeah, that's where we've come today. Welcome to the show. Glad you're here. Happy Monday. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. Grateful that you are here. Thanks for being part of the show. You know, yesterday I was on Fox News. I'll play some of that later for you, but I was debating, barely a debate, but this Democrat spokesperson woman, and she's going on about how charismatic and charming they are, and she's particularly fixed by the 37-year-old mayor of South Bend, Indiana, and I kept thinking of the entire time was, why does anybody honestly care what a Democrat talking head is saying on Fox News? Like, why? What is she there for? What is the purpose of this? I mean, the Democrats won't even debate on Fox News. So why is she on Fox News? Why does anyone care what she says? She's on Fox News. And she's there with me, and we're going, and I barely have any time because Leland Vitter keeps interrupting me. But I keep wondering, you know, what is the point of this? Are Democrats watching this? Are they looking? Are they listening to this? What's the... And then it occurred to me, too. Fox is trying desperately hard now to try to present itself as being in the middle in a lot of different ways. If you notice, Fox News, the network itself, is trying to present more of a moderate mainstream appeal. And I don't know why, because quite frankly, that's a recipe for disaster. It is. We are not living in moderate times right now. We're not living in times of, you can say, angry is over. We're living in very, very divided, very partisan times. That's just the fact. I don't know if it'll be like this in 10 years or 20 years, but it's certainly going to be like this for the next 10 months. We're heading into a presidential election. You know, CNN tried this crap years ago, pardon my French, when they tried to be the moderate network that was there for hurricanes and missing planes. It didn't work for them then. Of course, nothing they're doing is working for them now, but at least they have a consistent theme, which is if you don't like MSNBC, you can watch us bash Trump 24/7. You can just turn on over the dial and we'll do it. No problem. No questions asked. But if Fox News tries to go in the middle, it's going to be a mistake for them. Let me prove my point to you here. There's a story in Politico. Tom Davis writing this. Are Democrats facing their own Tea Party style reckoning? I witnessed the Republican Party become increasingly hostile to centrists. Now I'm seeing the same thing happening on the left. A wave election in midterms leading to a new House majority, one with victories by moderates in swing districts, a few freshman members in some of the safest seats in the country, pursuing an ideologically pure agenda that rifles up on and on and on. And then, of course, the fringe elements of the party. I mean, he calls the Tea Party fringe, but I think it was just people who were just tired of electing the same old people to Washington over and over and over again. And his point is the Democrats are going through exactly the same thing right now. It's sort of a grassroots kind of a hunger, and they're loud and they're getting all the attention. Problem, though, is they can't win in a general election because normal people driving down the highway who don't watch Fox News or MSNBC or CNN don't want what they're offering to people. They just don't want it. But as the Democratic Party grows more and more, the field for the nomination grows more and more crowded. The only alternative for each of them is to turn around and go to the left of the other person. This is what they're doing right now. And then, you know, you get this young, charming Beto O'Rourke jumping in the race. And they love him. He raised a record-breaking $6.1 million online in the first 24 hours of his presidential campaign, topping Bernie Sanders and all other Democratic candidates, his campaign announced. See, Democrats hate money, but they love money. See what I mean? They hate corporate money. They love corporate money. They hate PACs. They love them, the PACs, you know? They always pretend as if they want to get money out of politics and that they're the party of $25 donations by people who just really believe. Nonsense. They get big, big checks. And right now it's a money war, and it's also a war to be able to be the one who is most likely attracting the base, the grassroots of the Democratic Party. Much like, you could argue, years ago, the Tea Party, except I think what the Tea Party was proposing was pretty reasonable in terms of tax reform and that sort of thing. What this group of Democrats is looking at doing is to raise everybody's taxes and the Green New Deal and everything else that doesn't exactly sell in a general election. So they realize now that if they want to win, they've got to paint Donald Trump as just so incredibly evil and mean. So as each Democrat runs around apologizing for their whiteness and pointing out their white privilege and saying, please forgive me for being white privileged and my whiteness and my privilege, they're at the same time turning around and blaming Donald Trump for an event that happened in another country far, far across the world, in New Zealand. Blaming him because of a nut job, lunatic, evil guy who decides to lose it and kill people. And then they try to blame Trump for that. They rush to blame Trump for that. And then they start arguing that white supremacy is on the rise. Now, within the Democratic Party, there's a lot of white guys running for president. And so each of them has to turn around and basically disown his whiteness. And at the same time, attack white supremacy. And then apologize for anything that they may have that might be supreme over somebody else. But nice clothes, a car, an education, whatever it is. Their upbringing, whatever challenges that they didn't have in life, they have to apologize for that. At the same time, they have to tell everybody that white people are in mass now rising up to commit evil acts, and there's evil in our midst, and that the villains who are perpetrating all of this are led by Donald Trump in the White House, that his message to them is reaching all the way to New Zealand, and that's why they're acting the way that they act. And then, on cue, they start dropping proposals for gun control. Seeking to ban undetectable guns, Representative Madeline Dean, Democrat, Pennsylvania, proposed a new law over in New Jersey. The Attorney General, Grabeer Grewal, just cracking down on ghost guns, as he calls it. And Democrats all have to go on about how the AR-15 needs to go, and they're going to be the ones to crack down on it and take it away, and they're going to... And once again, Donald Trump's the bad guy because he supports the Second Amendment. Donald Trump's the guy who supports the Second Amendment, and therefore Donald Trump is the problem. Over the weekend, the president was asked a question about white supremacy, and the media went crazy over this answer. They hated this answer. The media, the left, they absolutely just would despise this. 1B.
You see today white nationalism as a rising threat around the world.
I don't really. I think it's a small group of people that have very, very serious problems. I guess if you look at what happened in New Zealand, perhaps that's a case. I don't know enough about it yet. They're just learning about the person and the people involved. But it's certainly a terrible thing.
The killer in this tragic incident wrote a manifesto, apparently. Did you see that? Apparently, he mentioned
it. I did not see it. I did not see it. But I think it's a horrible event. It's a horrible thing. I saw it early in the morning when I looked at what was happening in New Zealand. I just spoke, as you know, to the Prime Minister. I think it's a horrible, disgraceful thing and a horrible act.
It is a horrible, disgraceful thing and a horrible act. And he's right that white supremacists are a small group of people. He's also right that people who do this are not, they're not playing with a full deck. I mean, let's just be honest here. You do something like this, you're a very evil person. You're also, you got a big screw loose here. But they said he didn't condemn it enough. They were angry that he didn't condemn it enough. He didn't condemn white supremacy enough. So then instantly now all the talking heads go on TV and go, well, you have to realize now white supremacy is on the rise. Crimes by white people and the white oppression and on and on and on it goes. So then Beto O'Rourke, who is white, because let's face it, most guys with the nickname Beto are usually white and usually fraternity guys and usually doing keg stands, which I'm sure Beto O'Rourke, if he does any of those things, a keg stand would, in my mind, would boost him up a few notches from where he is. But he made a joke about how his wife raises the kids, and he had to apologize for that joke. And then, of course, he had to denounce his whiteness.
It's absolutely valid criticism, and it's constructive criticism. It has already made me a better candidate. Not only will I not say that again. But I'll be much more thoughtful going forward in the way that I talk about our marriage, and also the way in which I acknowledge the truth of the criticism that I have enjoyed white privilege. Absolutely. Undeniable. As I've shared with others, and certainly became a topic of conversation in the Senate campaign, I have been arrested twice in my life. One for attempted criminal trespass, and another more graver offense of driving while intoxicated. Those mistakes didn't end up defining me or narrowing my options in life. And it's not because I'm a great person or I'm a genius or I figured anything out. A lot of that has to do with the fact that I'm a white man, that I had parents who had the cash to post bail at the time.
Well, nobody's accusing you of being a genius. Let's just get that very, very clear. Okay, nobody's accusing you of being a genius. That's just number one. Number two, yeah, your parents had the cash. You grew up as a privileged guy, a privileged white guy. But in the Democratic Party today, as you want to be Robert F. Kennedy, who also grew up a privileged white guy, the difference is today you have to apologize and atone for that. What the Democrats still can't quite understand is that there are a lot of white voters in this country who haven't shot anybody, killed anybody, haven't been racist to anybody, haven't done anything. They're just going about their day. That's it. They're just going about their day. I mean, 99% of white people have just want to go home, get the kids, go shopping, the dog, all of it. And for so long now, the Democratic Party has continued to paint them as the bad guy. The only thing Trump has done is he's identified with white working class voters, something the Democratic Party used to do, by the way. They used to do it pretty well. They used to do a good job of it. Union guys and blue collar guys and all the other guys, they used to identify with these people and they were able to appeal to them. Then all of a sudden, they became the bad guys. And then Trump turned around and he reached out to them and they said, yeah, we like what he's saying. He wants to work for us. And then they decided to then follow him. And because of that, now he's accused of ratcheting up white supremacism. He condemns this horrific attack in New Zealand and they say it's not good enough. And Democrats turn around and say, well, I'm so sorry, I'm white. I don't know what to do with my whiteness. I apologize for it. Joe Biden, the biggest thing against Joe Biden right now is that Joe Biden is an old white guy. And all of these stories coming out about what Joe Biden did in the past. I've told you this. There's a story about how Joe Biden was so against desegregation back in the day. What do you think that's about? That's about trying to destroy his chances before he gets in the race. What I said at the start of this was that if this is a Tea Party moment for the Democrats and their base is very energized and angry and far left, they don't want anybody who looks or sounds or talks of any Democrat of old. They don't want it. They're not buying it. They're not selling it. They want no interest in it. You got to be of the left. You got to be progressive. You got to be a communist. You've got to be all those things. I'm not kidding when I tell you that a Jimmy Carter guy wrote a piece in Politico saying this Democrat civil war is going to destroy the party. I've seen the party. I've seen the civil war destroy the Democrats before. We can't let it happen again. Marximalist ideology is a prescription for division and defeat. The author of this is a guy who worked for President Jimmy Carter. This party is going loco every single day that a new candidate gets in the race. So you got this Jimmy Carter guy, this guy who worked in the Carter days, and he's warning the Democrats, hey, you better cool it or you're all going to lose. You're going to lose bigly. And, you know, I try to say the exact same thing. I don't want them to win. I don't. Believe me, that's the thing. I'm terrified of this future Democratic Party. But when I say this stuff, they go, oh, you're just trying to muddy the waters for Trump. Well, Stuart E. Eisenstadt wrote the following here. He said, I've lived through a Democratic Civil War before. In fact, I've been in the middle of two of them. First was in 1968 when I was the research director for Vice President Hubert Humphrey's presidential campaign. The second was in 1980 when I was Jimmy Carter's policy director. Both times I watched pressure from the party's liberal wing tear the party apart and bring down a Democratic presidential candidate. Both times the Republicans took the White House. Both times liberal dreams were shattered. Today I fear it could all be happening again. Stuart, Let me jump in here for a moment if I could. Don't fear it, man. It's happening. It's happening exactly like that again. Only actually, I think they're going even further to the left than Hubert Humphrey, which is amazing. I mean, that's some crazy right there. Back to his piece. As President Donald Trump moved the Republican Party sharply to the populist right, early entrants to the Democratic presidential contest have veered sharply to the left. Along with several energetic new Democratic members of the House, the left's new avant-garde has properly identified the need to confront serious national challenges, from rising income equality and inadequate healthcare coverage to climate change. But successfully dealing with these problems demands pragmatic solutions that can gain support from a majority of Americans and do not play into Trump's false narrative that Democrats are socialists. Speaking from experience, by demanding the moon, their proposals will crash on the launching pad and lead to nowhere good. In 1968, I smelled that stink bomb, the stink bombs and the anti-war protesters tossed into the lobby of Humphrey's convention headquarters. He watched from the window of his hotel suite as the Chicago police cracked down on the demonstrators with tear gas and clubs. Humphrey's challenger from the left, Senator Eugene McCarthy, who had castigated Humphrey for Lyndon Johnson's handling of Vietnam, didn't get the nomination that year. But McCarthy failed to reconcile with his fellow Minnesotan and led his supporters back into the fold only after it was too late. Nixon exploited the divisions in the party, and the country was elected by the thinnest of margins in November and was elected. His election led to an extension of the war Humphrey would have ended. During the next 4 years, 21,000 more American soldiers were killed, he writes. By the way, the war that Lyndon Johnson started, which caused the Democratic Party, well, I mean, he really did. He escalated it. Let's just be honest. Let's just call a spade. It was Lyndon Johnson's war. It's why I didn't run again. In 1980, the Democratic chasm opened again. I'd been Jimmy Carter's policy director during his 1976 campaign and went on to serve as his domestic policy advisor in the White House. A former Georgia governor running as a moderate in the Democratic primaries, Carter nevertheless had decidedly progressive accomplishments as president. And on he says that the sticking point was the liberal wing of the party and health care. He talks about how Carter had union guys backing him. But then to obtain support from liberal labor unions in the primaries of 1976, Carter agreed to broad principles for national health insurance. And when he was in office, he refused to accept Senator Ted Kennedy's single-payer government-run bill at a time of raging inflation. Over many days of negotiations with Kennedy, we came close to agreeing on a bill that would have substituted a government-run program for a privately managed program and full coverage phased in over many years. But in the end, Kennedy bowed to today the liberal demands and refused to back Carter's bill, which looks very much like Obamacare. And then Kennedy decided to challenge Carter from the left. The senator's liberal, also a guy who had a drinking and driving problem, like Beto. I'm not accusing Beto of killing anybody. I don't know, but I've not heard that. I'm not saying I don't know much about him, but Kennedy, obviously Chappaquiddick. In 1980, Kennedy decided to challenge Carter from the left. The senator's liberal supporters gummed up the 1980 convention with more than 50 minority floor amendments to the party's platform, demanding more and more spending and full-blown national health insurance. Sound familiar? Kennedy lost, but the damage was done. His challenge irrevocably split the party. When finally defeated, the senator stole the soul of the convention with a dramatic speech promising that the dream will never die. But this is the irony of Senator Kennedy saying the dream will never die. There's something ironic about that. He refused the ritual joint hand clasp with the renominated president, offering only a tortured long-distance handshake, and backed away from full participation in the campaign against Ronald Reagan, who coasted to victory in November. Anyway, bottom line is that they always say what's past is prologue, right? And that's what the Democrats are doing right now. That's why this former Humphrey Carter guy is warning Democrats, you got to cool it with the Marxism. The Marxist-Leninism thing is going to destroy your party, destroy the Democratic Party. And he's not wrong. The problem, though, is that the base doesn't want to hear this old privileged white guy yapping. They don't. They don't want to hear from him. Because I'm sure that this guy, who, again, is a Carter White House alum, I'm sure this guy has not yet atoned for all of his whiteness. I'm sure he's not woke yet. I'm sure that Stuart E. Eisenstadt probably does not identify with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Representative Omar. No, the base doesn't want anything this guy's offering. The base thinks he's crazy. The base of the Democratic Party thinks the problem is guys like him, guys like Joe Biden. guys like other people. That's what they think. Which is great, because I say bring it on. As more Democrats get in the race and move further left, you take Kirsten Gillibrand, for example. Now, she's a senator from New York State. Kirsten Gillibrand launched her campaign on Sunday. She put out a video. And in the video, we can achieve all this greatness and everything as long as we stop the madman Donald Trump. You know, Kirsten Gillibrand used to have an A rating from the NRA. She wanted English to be the official national language. She represented a district in upstate New York, which, if you're familiar with the area above Albany and Schenectady and Saratoga and all that area up there, to get votes up there as a Democrat, she had to be pro-gun. So she talked about having two guns under her bed. And English should be an official language. And we need to get tough on immigration and all those things. So now, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand has to apologize for all of those positions. She has to go to the base and say, I'm sorry, I wasn't woke then, but I'm woke now. And I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. And a cynical person, which I am, would say either she was lying then to get elected in that district, or she's lying now. You know, you just don't move that far in life on issues over the court when you're an adult. You know, when you're a kid and you're in college and, you know, you're playing hacky sack and you're doing, you know, hits of the whippets, maybe. But, you know, as you get older in life, you begin to have your position staked out a little bit more. So even if you're doing whippets, you tend to still have the same political beliefs. Now, I don't know if Kirsten Gillibrand was lying then or now. I just think that she's in the reality of saying, I'm so sorry I ever had positions like this. And it's adorable. It really is. It's adorable to watch. And they turn to this 37-year-old mayor. Guy's a mayor of a town that's always been Democrat. He's got 100,000 people. This woman who I debated on Fox News yesterday, you would have thought this kid was a second coming because he keeps getting elected in South Bend. Who the hell cares? But he's 37 years old. And he's gay, and he's married to a guy, and, you know, and they're happy, and then he's the future of the Democratic Party. And when you listen to his positions, you realize he's just another progressive. He's just a younger, gayer progressive. But that's all he is that stands out. That's the only thing. I'd say the only redeeming quality about the guy is that he's 37 years old. In this field of Democrats, it's the only way he stands out. But he's still the same progressive. He's offering the same Leninist, Marxist BS that everybody else is offering. So as you look at the field in 2020, and then you turn around, you look at the president, and you say, he's got his party locked down. His party's locked down. I mean, look, there are disagreements with Republicans, and there will continue to be. I'm telling you right now, that's okay. But he's not going to get a serious primary challenge. He's going to be renominated. The Republican Party's going to be there for him. But look at the damage the Democrats are doing to themselves right now. Look at this. What the Carter guy's warning here is that they won't ever be able to bring the party back together. Not only will they nominate somebody who's so far to the left that they can't win in a general election, they won't be able to bring their party back together again to then vote for the nominee. It's going to get so ugly and destructive for them between now and the primaries. And when the primary process is over and one of them emerges as the Democratic nominee, that they'll never be able to repair it. It'll be just this giant crack, like in the Liberty Bell, that they would probably ban because it's triggering, and that crack can never heal. And then Trump's going to sweep into victory, just like Nixon did, just like Reagan did. And yeah, I mean, if you want to make Nixon comparisons to Trump, as they do all the time on television about Watergate and Russiagate, the only comparison you need to make is that Nixon sailed into re-election thanks to Hubert Humphrey and the other wackos who were in the Democrat Party back then. And then Reagan dominated in 1980 because Carter let the party pull him. Because that's the natural flow of the Democratic Party, which you have to realize. And this is the one thing. The natural tendency of the Democrat Party is to go to the left of socialism and progressivism and Leninism and Marxism. That's the natural flow of things. If all things were equal and they could just do whatever they wanted without any regard to getting elected, that's where they would go. It's like being on a raft in a river. That's where the current would take them, very far left. They're not going to fall for that we got to be moderate stuff. They think the moderation is what got them to this point of Trump being in president. They're not going to let it happen again. They will not, under any circumstances, allowing a moderate to become the nominee. And if the moderate somehow does squeak in, they won't support him. Mark my words, I'm never wrong about this stuff.
Rich Cioli, 3 to 6, Talk Radio 1210, WPHT. Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.